Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening once again to the Hour of the Time. I'm William Cooper. Well, I want to, before we get into the broadcast, I want to remind everybody that we need your donations. We need them very badly. And I must remind you that the beginning of August is just one day away. And so I need you to send in your donations to support this broadcast right away. And the address is HOTT, H-O-T-T, in care of 101.1 FM. That's in care of 101.1 FM. P.O. Box 940, that's P.O. Box 940, Eager, spelled E-A-G-A-R, Arizona, 85925. That's Eager, spelled E-A-G-A-R, Arizona, 85925. There's also another way that you can help support this broadcast, and a very nice young man and his wife, Bart and Janelle, whom some of you have met over the telephone, and most of you heard the broadcast when he was a guest, concerning prepaid legal. If you don't have a lot of money, folks, listen to me very carefully. If you don't have a lot of money, chances are, sooner or later, you're going to get in some kind of legal difficulty. And if you don't have a lot of money, you can't afford a lawyer. Can't afford these people because, well, because they charge too much money. You see, they say that we all have equal status under the law. That's not true in this country. I doubt that it ever was beyond the point where we knew the law ourselves and represented ourselves, and that was early in the history of this nation. Since then, people don't know the law anymore. They really don't care. They don't want to spend any time learning it, and they certainly couldn't represent themselves if they had to. Legal representation is expensive. It's way beyond most of our ability to even think about it, much less actually walk into an attorney's office and sit down and write out several thousand dollars as a retainer and then have them represent us in court or on anything else, as a matter of fact. Go down and ask an attorney how much it would cost you just to have him write you a will and register it, make sure that it's all legal, so that it can stand up against the challenge. I mean, just a simple thing like that. It's exorbitant. It costs a fortune. And I don't know about you, but I couldn't afford it if I had to. It's beyond our means for most of us. There may be somebody out there listening who could maybe afford it, but most of us, we can't. And what would happen to us is that we would have to go into hock for everything that we own or have any interest in or any equity in, which means we would probably lose our cars, our furniture, our home, our savings account, or whatever investments we have. We'd have to cash it all in order to pay off these people. So, folks, listen to me. If you can't afford to spend $100,000 tomorrow to pay a lawyer to defend you in court, or do any number of many other things that require legal help, in or out of a courtroom, if you can't do that, you need to call Bart, and you need to talk to him about prepaid legal. He'll answer all your questions, but for as little, folks, as little as $26 or less per month. You see, in some areas of the country, it's a lot less. $26 or less per month, every month, you can have your own dream team. Really. It's no joke, and it's the truth, and you can't afford not to do this. You just can't afford not to do it. Now, when you call, Bart, if he's there, he will pick up the phone and talk to you. If he's not there, you're going to get an answering machine, leave your name and your phone number, and he will call you back. And make sure you heard him telling you heard about this on the Hour of the Time. Okay? Leave your name and your number, and he'll call you back. If he's there, he'll pick up the phone and talk to you. If the phone is busy, wait a while and call back again. Or wait a couple of hours or call back tomorrow morning, but make sure you call. Either talk to Bart or leave your name and number, and Bart will get back to you. He's one of the nicest guys you'll ever meet. He's been like a son to me for many, many years. I love him. I love his wife. They're just wonderful people. And he'll talk to you as long as you need him to talk to you, and he'll answer all your questions that you have and make sure that you ask all the questions that you have. So here's the number. Write it down right now. 866-77-LEGAL. That's 866-77-LEGAL. 866-77-L-E-G-A-L. 866-77-L-E-G-A-L. Don't forget to dial 1 before you dial the number. Okay, folks. That's I feel so good about this, making this available to people, because I know what can happen to you if you get in some legal difficulty on your job. Somebody falls down in your yard. You know, your dog bites somebody. It could be a million things. And so many people every year end up in some kind of legal difficulty, you'd be absolutely amazed. And I know many of you have already gone through it. You know how expensive it can be. Don't let it happen to you again. Call Bart, 866-77-LEGAL. That's 866-77-LEGAL. And folks, don't wait until you get in trouble to do it. You hear me? Do it right now. You need it. And you really do. So, you know, get with it, folks. Come on. Listening to the Hour of the Time, I'm William Cooper, the most dangerous radio host in America, according to William Jefferson Franklin. Music, written and performed by our friends in Hollywood, California, specifically for and only for the Hour of the Time. You know, my many travels and things that I do, I run into a lot of people. And last night, I got to sit down and talk to a young man who was so interesting. I liked him a lot. He's 12 years old. 12 years old. And we had a long conversation while his family was eating dinner. And what a smart young man. His name's Jonathan. Smart young man. I was so impressed with him that I decided to spend some time with him and ask him what he wanted to do, you know, when he got older. And he said, here's what he told me. He says, I'm going to be a NASCAR driver. I asked him, I said, what do your parents think about that? He said, well, they don't think much of it at all. You know, they want me to be something else, but that's what I'm going to be. I'm going to be a NASCAR driver because that's what I want. I love racing, he said. I asked him if he'd ever, taken part in any soapbox derbies or anything like that, and told him about some of the famous race car drivers who actually started out when they were young boys in the soapbox derby races, and then graduated to go-karts and then to dirt tracks when they got a little older, and got their start and became famous. And so I encouraged him to do that if he really wanted to be a NASCAR driver. And he interrupted me at one point and he said, I'm telling you right now, in 8 to 10 years, you're going to see my name setting records in the NASCAR racing circuit. 8 to 10 years. His name's Jonathan. I'm not going to tell you his last name because, it was obvious to me when his father came over to tell him it was time to go, but his father didn't appreciate him wanting to be a NASCAR driver and didn't appreciate the advice that I gave the young man to follow his dream, whatever it is, and try, to do what makes you happy in life, and so that you don't end up toiling away at some job or profession that you don't like just to please other people. Yeah, the look his father gave me was not kind at all. So we're going to leave the last name out of it so that we don't embarrass his father or his mother. But Jonathan, if you're listening, and I hope you are, here goes. You watch, folks. I believe it. I believe what that young man told me. I believe that you will see Jonathan's name out there in front, finishing first, second, or third, setting records on the NASCAR circuit within 8 to 10 years. And by golly, if that doesn't happen, because of his character and his intelligence and his absolute commitment to what he wanted to do, if that doesn't happen, it will surprise the hell out of me. Bunch of mail today, folks, and it wasn't the usual fare, so I'm going to read some of it tonight. Let you hear from yourselves. Dear Mr. Cooper, I am a very recent listener. Tonight I heard your rebroadcast of 1996 with your family. I was pleased to hear your quotes of the interview of Father Malachi Martin. I received a very kind letter from Father Martin shortly before his death. He is to be missed. I finally got your address in full. I listen to your program nightly. But there's a lot of interference, and I do not wonder why. Yeah, we all know why. A lot of people are very interested that you don't get interested or hear what I have to say on this broadcast. He continues, I enclose here a small sample donation with an SASE. If you could be kind enough to throw the SASE in with your regular outgoing mail, then I will know my gift was not intercepted and that future donations will arrive safely. Thank you. That's me saying thank you. I previously sent a donation to the McGuckin Family Trust and would welcome an on-air update of that debacle. I will as soon as there's something, to report. We've already reported that that Mrs. McGuckin was released, and now she's entered into a legal battle to regain custody of her children. And as soon as we know something more than that, we will certainly let you know. He continues, the local library listed Behold a Pale Horse on its computer, but it has mysteriously disappeared from the library, as was for months their copy of Jim Marr's Rule by Secrecy. I've requested an interlibrary loan of your book, and hopefully a copy will turn up. It doesn't surprise me. Barnes & Noble, the huge chain of bookstores across the country, has reported that my book, Behold a Pale Horse, is the most stolen book in their inventory. He continues, as for my situation, I am at present recovering from my own near-death experience with the local bureaucratic Nazis after 2 years of prosecution, my impoverishment, and the burning and bulldozing of my home of 41 years. I'm starting over. No job, no car, no phone, no public assistance, etc., which I wouldn't want anyway. That's the bad news. The good news is that my eyes have been opened, and the sale of what was left of my property has given me enough to decompress while I do some R&R, resupply, and re-equip. The JBT's mistake was that they didn't kill me. Don't quit and don't lose hope. And I don't say that as one who has never been hopeless. And in the meantime, thank you. Signed, John. Thank you, John. And I wish you all the luck in the world in your starting over. I've been there, done that, as you well know. Mr. Bill Cooper, here is my pledge to you as a fellow Vietnam vet. Every time I get one of these I can sacrifice, I'll send it along to you. You've earned my respect over the years. I only wish I could really help with money, but I'm a rancher here in the good life state of blank. I can't always get your program. I get it on 7.415 shortwave when it comes in. I want to offer you this. As I said, I operate a family ranch. My family has been here since 1867, so we aren't moving. You and your loved ones are invited to come here anytime. It's a safe haven should the need arise. I've got stuff from a 50 caliber to 22s, and I keep my edge. I served in Vietnam from March 68 to April 69. And I'm not going to go into what his job was, just in case there's somebody interested in tracking him down. But let me say this. He is much decorated Vietnamese veteran who actually is one of those few of us who really saw combat and really fought in that war. See, most of the people you meet who call themselves Vietnam veterans will tell you stories that are just that, stories, never occurred. I've got enough V devices to have saved Borda's butt. Of course, I know his suicide had nothing to do with V devices, and he didn't commit suicide, for your information. He was murdered. Admiral Borda, we're talking about. I, too, have four children, three daughters and one son. They're the reason I'm still here. My second wife, not the mother of my children, is with me. She is up to speed on most of the issues we have in our country. Prior to meeting me 5 years ago, she was just going along. Now she has brakes! Exclamation point. I would like to work with you. I constantly try to wake these sheeple up around here. Most of them will listen. The rest can go to hell, now or later. Sincerely, H. And he has a little P.S. here. There are a lot of us out here who feel the same as you do. And Bill, we are going to kick their chicken blank asses. And yes, you're absolutely right. That's exactly what we're going to do. When the time comes, it won't be a piece of cake, but we're going to do it. Dear Bill, I'm so sorry to hear that you're ill. If I'd have known, I never would have bothered you with my trivial problems, and I have no idea what he's talking about. It really hurts me to think that a man like you, a true patriot and a wonderful father and husband, has to suffer with health problems because of the stinking socialist swine that keeps you from getting the care you need. I wish the restoration would happen now. I'm sick of waiting, of watching the slow death of our country, of our republic. I wish they would just go for it and let's be done with it. It kills me to see them destroy good people like you. For you to sacrifice all your happiness and invest all that time and effort into this cause just to have you pass away before it comes to fruition is more than I can take. Listening to Pooh laugh and giggle, and especially to hear the happiness in your voice, the happiness that has been missing for so long, it really upset me tonight. I shut the radio off. I couldn't listen anymore. I get so damned depressed sometimes, but you have always snapped me out of it, made me realize that my life is not the most important thing, and that principles and ideals are more important. Like Patrick Henry said, is life so dear, or peace so sweet, as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery? No, it is not. I leave you with one of my favorite poems, God Bless You, Bill. And I'm going to read that poem because it's one of my favorites also. So listen carefully, folks. Tell me not in mournful numbers life is but an empty dream. For the soul is dead that slumbers, and things are not what they seem. Life is real. Life is earnest. And the grave is not its goal. Dust thou art, to dust returnest, was not spoken of the soul. Not enjoyment, not sorrow, is our destined end, our way, but to act, that each tomorrow find us farther than today. Art is long, and time is fleeting, and our hearts, though stout and brave, still, like muffled drums, are beating funeral marches to the grave. The world's broad field of battle and the bivouac of life, be not like dumb, driven cattle. Be a hero in the strife. Trust no future, howe'er pleasant. Let the dead past bury its dead. Act. Act in the living present, heart within, and God o'erhead. Lives of great men all remind us we can make our lives sublime, and, departing, leave behind us footprints on the sands of time. Footprints that perhaps another, sailing o'er life's solemn main, a forlorn and shipwrecked brother, seeing, shall take heart again. Let us then be up and doing, with a heart for any fate, still achieving, still pursuing, learn to labor and to wait. It was written by Henry Wadsworth Longfellow, ladies and gentlemen. And I hope you like that at least half as much as I did. Dear Bill, nobody can write a vocal aria like Puccini. I do hope Dorothy liked it and still remembers that night. Rebroadcast of program 62696. Good commentary by my guru, Ron Cole, this time. Where the hell is this country going? I've been to China this month, had quite an eye-opener. We have good reason to fear these folks, but only because there are so many of them, and they are willing to work hard. Otherwise, they are some of the nicest people I've met. Didn't see any communists, just a bunch of capitalists having the time of their lives. The cities are becoming quite attractive, many new, very tall buildings, most with traditional Chinese accents, and quite a few have world-class innovations in styling. I worked in these cities, all fairly accessible from Beijing. The intervening rural areas were quaint, but usually under intense cultivation where terrain permitted. This might surprise some of you. The most prevalent by far crop was corn. I saw very little rice being eaten in restaurants and cafeterias. This is North China. I am late with my remittance this month. Please excuse. Your program Monday night should be transcribed and widely disseminated in print. You seem to have drawn all the signs and portents together to show the complete historical picture, past, present, and sadly, the future. But the enemy can only win if we fail to act. Best regards, Ed. Thank you, Ed. Thank all of you. Here's a picture of Ed. Seems like he got a lot of pictures with him. Everybody wanted to take pictures with him. On the Great Wall of China at Badaling, about 60 kilometers north of Beijing, this was a Sunday trip in the company of our rep in China. Many Chinese asked me to pose with them for photos. The older men in 80s were particularly eager to be photographed with a Yankee. They probably remember the war. As it is, few Chinese have good regard for the Japanese. That's always been that way. And here's a nice card. I just love this little message on the front. It says, "Dear Bill, if I could, I'd give you my eyes just for a moment to see you as I do. Then maybe you would see for yourself this beautiful person who matters so much to all who have the privilege of sharing his life." And inside it says, "Dear Bill, my spiritual family is closer to me than my immediate one. The time we all shared at the conferences are memories we will always treasure. Love, Gene." Thank you so much, Gene. And I enjoyed your phone call also very, very much. Now a little bit of humor. I like this. A couple had two little boys, 8 and 10 years old, who were excessively mischievous. They were always getting into trouble. And their parents knew that if any mischief occurred in the town, their sons were probably involved. Sounds like me and my brother. And in later years, me and Bob Swan. The boy's mother heard that a clergyman in town had been successful in disciplining children, so she asked if he would speak with her boys. The clergyman agreed, but asked to see them individually. So the mother sent her 8-year-old first, in the morning, with the older boy to see the clergyman in the afternoon. The clergyman, a huge man with a booming voice, sat the younger boy down and asked him sternly, "Where is God?" The boy's mouth dropped open, but he made no response, just sitting there with his mouth hanging open, wide-eyed. The clergyman repeated the question in an even sterner tone, "Where is God?" Again, the boy made no attempt to answer. The clergyman raised his voice even more, shook his finger in the boy's face, and bellowed, "Where is God?" The boy screamed and bolted from the room, ran directly home and dived into his closet, slamming the door behind him. When his older brother found him in the closet and asked, "What happened?" The younger brother, gasping for breath, replied, "We are in big, big trouble this time." Every once in a while, a gem comes along. And I got to tell you, folks, that's one of those gems. Right along. On the Hour of the Con, the only true ministry of freedom in the entire world. And, unfortunately, the last place on earth where truth and honesty can be found in media. A lot of people in this country think Larry King is really smart. Bill O'Reilly also. And Chris Matthews. They think these are just wonderful commentators. Somebody show them Article 4, Section 4 of the Constitution of the United States of America. And tell them, please, that this is not the democracy that they keep proclaiming it to be, but a constitutional republic. You see, they're not so smart. At all. Creators Syndicate, a syndicated column written by Walter Williams, columnist, Wednesday, July 18th, 2001, from the forum, page A13. Sure, we're free. Sure, we're free, comparatively speaking. Johann Wolfgang von Goethe said, "No one is as hopelessly enslaved as the person who thinks he's free." That captures the essence of tethered citizens. Time to Repeal the Welfare State, written by Sheldon Richman, a senior fellow at the Fairfax, Virginia-based Future of Freedom Foundation, fff.org. We just celebrated the 225th anniversary of our Declaration of Independence. We listened to speeches about the liberties bequeathed by our founders, but according to Sheldon's convincing, compelling, marshaled evidence, we're not as free as we think. Yes, we can think of ourselves as free, but only relative to the rest of the world. In terms of the founders' vision of freedom, we're little more than serfs. You say, "What do you mean, Williams? I'm free." Richmond would ask you, "Are you in charge of the amount of money you set aside for retirement? And at what age you'll retire?" "No," the government mandates that you join its retirement program. If you insist on being left alone and don't obey, you'll go to jail or otherwise suffer at the hands of government. What's more, when government changes Social Security rules, unlike a private retirement plan, you can't sue for breach of contract. Richmond asks, is it you who decides when your child will go to school and for how many weeks and study what? No, it's government. That not only makes these decisions, it also attacks and undermines values taught at home. What if you think your child is capable of having a job at age 12, as I was? No dice. The government determines the age at which one can work, and for how long, and at what pay. Suppose you want to save money. Your money and privacy is subject to a web of regulatory offices, including the U.S. Treasury, the Federal Reserve System, and the Securities and Exchange Commission. If you make deposits or withdrawals of $5,000 or more, your bank must report it to the government. If you attempt to stop government's prying eyes by making deposits and withdrawals just below the reporting threshold, you face fines and imprisonment for structuring. You own land, but you don't control it. You might have purchased land as an investment, only to find that when you retire and are ready to build or sell it, you can't. It might have been designated a wetland, which is a swamp, by environmental authorities, or declared a habitat for an endangered bird, rat, or some insect whose rights the government deems more important than yours. Alexis de Tocqueville's Democracy in America has a chapter titled, What Sort of Despotism Democratic Nations Have to Fear? He said citizens of modern democracies faced a despotism of a different character, which would be more widespread and milder. It would degrade men rather than torment them. De Tocqueville went on to say, I do not expect for their leaders to be tyrants, but rather schoolmasters. He adds, it only tries to keep them in perpetual childhood. It does so by providing security and necessities, assuming responsibility for their concerns, managing their work, and more. It gladly works for their happiness, but wants to be the sole agent and judge of it. Democracy gives an aura of legitimacy to acts that would otherwise be deemed tyranny. That is precisely why the framers gave us a constitution that sought to protect us against the abuses of majorities. That's what our Bill of Rights is all about, those congressional shout-nots. It's just too bad that Congress, acting on the will of the majority, have abrogated these protections. Tethered Citizens is an excellent, informative, and easily read 150-page book that would have been much shorter had Richmond chosen to list our remaining liberties. So very true. As we deteriorate from a constitutional republic into a democracy, you will see more and more tyranny. On a larger and more terrible scale than you ever dreamed possible, this country anyway. Here's a column written by John Leo. Yes, groupthink really does infest media. News stories about the 2000 census have been arriving with heavy spin attached. A front page article in the Washington Post reported huge increases in the number of gay and lesbian households in the District of Columbia and across the country. The story leaves the impression that a major demographic shift has occurred with heavy political implications. Indeed, one activist told the Post that the numbers are a political weapon, but the numbers are small, though percentage increases from a tiny base are large. The Post reported a 66% rise in gay households in the District of Columbia since the 1990 census, and more than 700% in Delaware and Nevada. but most of the hard numbers were missing, so it was hard to figure out what was going on. Eager to help, I pestered the census people by email, and after spending 20 minutes with a pad and pencil, I am now prepared to announce the real story and offer it to the Post. In the 25 states for which the Census Bureau has now released data, plus District of Columbia, there are 250,679 same-sex households, are just over one-half of 1% of all households. So the Post headline, Census Shows Big Increase in Gay Households, really should have been, Gay Couples Rise to 0.0054% of U.S. households. Why do news stories get mangled this way? Partly because the Census Bureau is releasing its data oddly, dribbling out the number of gay households state by state, but the main reason is the obvious one. The newsroom culture is sympathetic to the gay cause. Ask yourself how many groups could make page one by going from 0.1% in the household sweepstakes all the way up to 0.5% in only 10 years. Britt Hume of Fox News was talking recently about the newsroom culture. If you work in the media for any length of time, he told the New York Times Magazine, you notice that reporters, editors, producers, correspondents, they have a common set of views on a range of issues. Abortion, the environment, gun control. There's a resultant consensus so universal that it's almost imperceptible to those who hold those views. As someone who has logged more than 30 years in the media echo chamber here in New York, I can confirm what Hume said. It is easier to discover a white truffle in Central Park than to find a reporter or editor who lacks the conventional set of newsroom opinions. Well, almost. The groupthink extends to welfare reform, the death penalty, school choice, racial preferences, and the urgent need to smash the tobacco companies and penalize every last American who still smokes. Daycare, too. If any study shows that daycare tends to have some bad effects on some children, the newsroom will erupt with articles proving the study is untrue. Justice Sandra O'Connor's recent speech in Minnesota expressing reservations about the death penalty was widely reported. But in the same talk, she had some harsh things to say about contingency fees and the perverse incentives and the untoward consequences they are creating, along with the overnight millionaires among high-flying trial lawyers. Strong stuff. But you probably missed it. A computer search showed only one paper outside Minnesota running the Associated Press copy of O'Connor's litigation remarks. The newsroom looks kindly on trial lawyers. After all, they protect the common man, and like the teachers' unions, always treated gently, they fund the Democratic Party. The Boston Globe recently ran a long, admiring profile of Diane Luby, the new head of Massachusetts Planned Parenthood. I was struck by how closely the article followed the promotional and fundraising material of Planned Parenthood, presenting Luby as a lonely heroine. Diane Luby braves threats, said the subhead. Beset by backward anti-abortion fanatics in the newsroom culture, pro-choicers are allies, pro-lifers are dangerous zealots. The newsroom is enormously fond of bias, disparity, articles alleging that blacks get the short end of the stick in nearly every area of American life. Because these articles get so much space, activists turn out all the more biased surveys and allegations, many of them shaky. Last week, the Washington Post weighed in with a survey claiming that whether out of hostility, indifference, or simple lack of knowledge, broadly misinformed whites were guilty of the pervasiveness of incorrect views. Now, what did whites do wrong this time? Many think blacks are doing better economically than they really are. But why such a racial tongue-lashing over a belief, correct on the whole, that blacks are joining the middle class in great numbers? Because it seems to explain in part white resistance to even the least intrusive forms of affirmative action. Ah, the point of the survey reached at last. A newsroom plug for preferences disguised as a news story. Britt Hume's remarks, quoted, are from a magazine article trying to explain why Fox News is doing so well. There is a rather obvious explanation. Maybe a lot of people want to escape the newsroom monoculture. Just a thought. Pretty good stuff, huh, folks? Thanks to our listeners who sent all this stuff in. And here's another columnist who says we should be following the lead of Philip Morris, who has a plan to balance government budgets and save billions on the rising costs of rising life expectancies. It's very simple. Want to cut down on government spending? Well, just tell people to smoke more cigarettes. They'll die earlier, and government won't have to pay out all those entitlement programs. So there it is in a nutshell. I don't have to read you the whole column. Unbelievable. This editor's comments from Machine Design, issue of June 7th, 2001, written by Ronald Cole, the editor. You may have seen a reference to Ronald Cole in one of the letters that I read. This was sent by that gentleman. Guns, paint, and hyperactivity. Most of my childhood friends and I grew up in households that had guns. None of the firearms were kept under lock and key. Except when adults were hunting or target shooting, the guns were brought out only on special occasions, at which time children were allowed to handle them under supervision. The children knew where the guns were kept, and we could have handled them surreptitiously had we dared, but we didn't dare. We knew that guns were dangerous in the hands of kids. And we were kids. Everyone treated guns with respect, and we children knew we would be vigorously punished if we were caught handling a gun without parental permission. I don't remember these rules being spelled out for us. They were just something everyone knew. I'd be hard-pressed to explain why, but one reason I can offer is that we kids knew we were second-class citizens in the household hierarchy. Mom and Dad didn't spend a lot of time telling us they loved us. Instead, they spent a lot of time telling us they expected us to make something of ourselves. And that wasn't going to happen unless we obeyed the rules, both at home and at school. We were afraid to misbehave because we knew that would bring dire consequences. At the same time, adults behaved too. In the town where I grew up, nobody ever turned a gun on anyone. They knew they would go to the electric chair if they killed someone. It was guaranteed. We lived in houses where every bit of paint was lead-based, but none of us ever got lead poisoning. Kids get lead poisoning when they eat peeling paint or breathe lead-laden dust. I think we never got lead poisoning because our parents kept our houses clean. If the paint peeled, they swept up the flakes and repainted. In addition, Mom ran the vacuum cleaner or mopped the floors every single week. I wonder why there is so much concern about lead poisoning today. We kids didn't have much self-esteem. We knew that self-esteem was something we would get once we grew up and made something of ourselves. We knew that kids who had too much self-esteem were cocky and adults didn't like them. We wanted adults to like us because then they would give us good grades in school. pay us to do chores and buy us BB guns or other stuff we wanted. I went to an elementary school with approximately 240 other students. Not one of us was hyperactive or had attention deficit disorder. Not one. Our teachers had a way to keep us settled down. It involved an escalated response. The first level was a reprimand before the whole class. The next level was being sent to stand in a corner. If that didn't work, corporal punishment was administered. The corporal punishment didn't hurt. It was only meant to embarrass us, just as the two less severe steps were meant to embarrass us. The thing we feared most was being embarrassed in front of classmates, and that was a powerful inducement for us to behave and keep focused. School wasn't fun, but we knew that Dad didn't have fun at work, Mom didn't have fun doing housework, and our teacher didn't have fun trying to teach us. We understood that fun was something doled out in small doses and for brief periods of time. Despite this, we were almost always content. Well-defined rules and predictable circumstances made us feel secure. We were never bored. Maybe today's kids would enjoy that kind of structure. Just, you know, his opinion. Happens to be mine also. Ladies and gentlemen, it is so true. There are so many children today that are lost. An entire generation has been destroyed. Their minds have been literally destroyed by what the government calls an education system. I call it a huge brain vacuum that just sucks the brains right out of everybody it comes in contact with and destroys them literally forever. Don't believe it? Ask the next child you see that doesn't belong to you if he can tell you what the Bill of Rights is. Just stumbled into this broadcast. You're listening to the Hour of the Time. I'm William Cooper, the most dangerous radio host in America, according to William Jefferson Clinton, and you should know. The only true ministry of freedom in the world. You can't have freedom without God. First God, creator endowed rights, then freedom. That's it for tonight, folks. Don't miss tomorrow night's episode of the Hour of the Time. Watch the website. We're going to start back with our photography stuff. We're going to have some pages on the website. We have a monthly photography contest for those of you who want to send us pictures. We'll scan them in. We'll have the visitors to the website vote on them. And whatever's the top photograph of the month or the week or whatever we decide on, we'll post that on the home page and print the winner's name. So you'll get photo credits. On the Veritas News Service website, williamcooper.com. If you haven't been there, go. Williamcooper.com. It's the only place for truth, for real news. to find out what's happening. With all the gossip and the bullshit and the crap and the lies and the innuendos and the... give me a break. Good night, folks. God bless each and every single one of you. Good night, Annie Poon Allison. I love you. Check it out, folks, on the far turn. On the far turn. Number 62, Jonathan, in the blue car, has just passed the number one car, and there's only a half a lap to go. Watch for it, folks. It will come through in 8 to 10 years. Folks, we need your donations now, right now. Don't procrastinate. Get them in here. We value this broadcast. There's only one way to keep it on the air. Send cash, blank money orders, or gold or silver coins. Do it now. Don't do it if you don't value this program. If you don't think you're getting something from your money, don't do it. But if you do, get busy. We need it. We need it badly. Hot, H-O-T-T, in care of 101.1 FM, P.O. Box 940, Eager, Arizona, 85925. That's Hot, in care of 101.1 FM, P.O. Box 940, Eager, Arizona, 85925. Don't forget to call Bart. Call Bart, ask him how you can become a member of Prepaid Legal. 866-77-LEGAL. That's 866-77-LEGAL. Tomorrow night, be here with me. You won't regret it.